This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 453, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Stuck in the shade, where there's no sunshine. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 453. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are panels.net's Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Oh, I don't even have a thing. I don't even have a thing.
There was a slightly longer and that signified disappointment, and then Josh Flanagan. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite one or the best one. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book as well as other books of the week on this here show. All kinds of fun stuff happens. Sometimes we talk about...
Back when it was Tom Cater's, it was funny, and now it's just threatening.
Now it's... Oh, you're back? Before we get to the show...
That other guy's so positive.
Quick reminder and a warning. It's a review show, so we'll be talking about things that happened in the books this week. So if you're worried about spoilers... Pause the show and come back. Until then, Paul.
I just want to say I'm happy for Tom and Neesman off in the Grey Havens, enjoying themselves.
In retirement.
Not that I wouldn't want. It's too early for me for retirement. I've got a whole.
Listen, buddy. Listen. How long? A year? A year? A little? A year and a month? A year and 6 months?
What?
How long have you been doing this show?
How long have I doing this show?
Longer than that.
I don't know.
It's almost 2 years.
Almost. Yeah, we'll see.
Because it would have been January of last year.
Yeah. Talk to us when it's at 9.
Yeah, okay. But you did. Yeah, you're right. You did those occasional ones. You did your little show. I'm just saying, is it a show if it doesn't have a regular format? Just let's talk about whatever, whenever. It's fine.
No rules.
Let's talk about the pick. Okay.
Yes. Did you record your show in the 60s? No rules. Do what we want.
You just buy like two big boxes of reel-to-reel tape and then figure out how to transfer that to digital. Why no one's smoking. Why is it like this in here? Shut up.
Paul, what was the pick?
It was Wild's End, number one, from ever popular Boom Studios. And yeah, and this is a number one. People go, it's a number one again. I love number ones.
We love number ones here at iFanboy.
You know what else? Well, why?
Why? Well, because we read a lot of comics, and sometimes it's very. I don't know why I censored myself.
Why did you do that?
I'll be keeping this one classy. Thank you very much. We read a lot of comics, and whenever there is a light shown on some corner that we have not explored to death, it is invigorating and exciting.
It's the promise of the new.
Promise of the new. I always love beginnings. Endings can be really muddy. I can think of a million different comics storylines that the beginnings are great and the endings not so much.
Really, I can't. I've forgotten all of them.
Well, I remember
the ones with good endings. I've forgotten so many because.
What else I love? Talking animals. I've always loved talking animals. My favorite novel is Benicula.
Country British. Fucking country British animals, my friend.
I have an affinity for that as well. You know, there's Animal Farm. There's a great grand tradition of English talking animal stories. There's that. There's shades of the Fantastic Mr. Fox in here.
That's what I thought immediately. I opened it up. I was like, oh, he picked it because they made a comic book of the fabulous Mr. Fox. Or Fantastic? I never get that
fantastic
right.
Fantastic Mr. Fox, yeah. And because he's fantastic. He's George Clooney.
Nothing to me.
And the other thing it reminded me of is I was a big fan of Brian Jakes's Redwall books, and the language in there is very simply like Cockney moles and stuff. And it'd be like, what the hell are they saying? And I figured it out. You'd speak it out phonetically, and it kind of works. But the high concept of this is Wind in the Willows meets War of the Worlds. So you've got sort of this post-Victorian English town. And you've got a dog who is a sea dog.
Retired Navy.
He was a retired naval man. He's seen some action in the foreign wars, as they say. And he shows up just in time for an alien invasion. And what I love about this debut is that, and we should say this is Dan Abnett and Ian J. Kolbert, who also did The New Deadwardians. And Dan Abnett, of course, is responsible for Everything You Love This Summer in Guardians of the Galaxy, pretty much. The tone, at
I believe
least.
There was another chap involved.
There was a few other chaps involved, but yeah. But anyways, what I loved about this is that we don't actually see the aliens make planetfall, and we don't see too much of them until late in the game. We see some poachers out at night. We've got a fox named Fox, and I guess like a stoat or a weasel named Bodhi, and they're out poaching. So that's what they do. If you've seen the Fantastic Mr. Fox. And they see a falling star and this big explosion, and something bad happened to Bodhi. They blew him up.
He got fried.
And Fox is out of his mind. What happened? There's aliens. There's people coming from the sky. And meanwhile, we're having this nice little community meeting at the King's Arms with some great names in this book. Gilbert Arendt, the solicitor, who's a rabbit, who's got sort of the George Lucas neck, and Peter Minx, a journalist who is, I guess, a mink, and they come to greet Clive Slipaway, the dog, who is, as we said, is a former sailor, and
he has a quiet dignity. He's seen some things that have during the war that have made him very shy and not really keen on interacting. But
he's not shy. He's taciturn. He's seen a lot of stuff happen. It's been very bad for him.
This reminded me a little bit of Hot Fuzz.
Yeah,
in the town,
the greater good.
That sort of small town feel. I loved this. I thought this was wonderful. I didn't even need the aliens. I would be fine to hang out in the town and go to council meetings.
When I heard about this book and I just heard the pitch and I saw the covers and stuff, and there's a was it David Peterson who does Mouse Guard.
Mm-hmm.
He does a variant cover on this, and it's gorgeous. But when I first, I was like, I really hope that that's my week, because I would love to talk about that book. And it turns out it was even better than I thought it would be. It's so English.
It's so English. The characters are great, and the art from Ian J. Kolbert,
yeah,
Kolbert, is wonderful. There's so much expression in the, especially. Mr. Slipaway, there's so much sadness in the dog's face, and you almost don't need the dialogue to get what he's feeling. Although I feel like he's using the wrong brush to paint that windowsill, but yeah. I could be wrong.
He's painting his windowsill blue, and then we see Fox with
a giant brush
with wet paint on his paws later on, and so there's this all kind of mystery going on, and I think it seems like everybody's a little bit suspicious. So I don't know. I just I love those little like. English town sort of dramas, what's more of a comedy, but like Vicar of Dibley. Like I grew up on that stuff because my dad was always watching that, mm-hmm. and things like, and it's, I guess it's Irish, but Monarch of the Glen. But I loved all those UK shows that were like little towns, and it was sort of like their version of like Maybury,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very different tone, obviously. But I think there's something about a tight knit little community, and you know, a little bit of suspicion. You know, when you got aliens involved, you kind of think of the monsters are due on Maple Street, and there's that paranoia and everything going on. And there's a lot of melodrama in this that I like too, like the depiction of the pigs. Mm-hmm. So we actually witness a little alien drone murdering a pig lady. And she's sort of like, oh, shoo, get out of here. You know, like you're, you know, and not raising a ruckus. And it's that's very melodramatic to me.
Yeah.
Just everybody, just quaint, quiet, well-mannered town.
If this is Lower Crow Church, is there an Upper Crow Church? Is that where the swells are?
I should rather think.
Josh, what did you think of the book?
I liked it. I found it charming.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say I was a little bit bored.
Okay.
Not
enough tigers eating cheeseburgers.
No, I mean, like it was. I don't know. It was definitely charming and it was quaint. I don't know. Just
there. I mean, they do spend a lot of time in that meeting.
Yeah,
which was great. Arms, meeting,
which
was wonderful.
I liked it.
You know what it reminded me of? What it reminded me of was the old Mr. Toad animations, the Disney Wind in the Willows.
Like Wind in the Willows.
Wind in the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me exactly of that, and I love that. I love the. Sort of tone of it, and the fact that it's like half that English reserve and then half just utter madcap craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was a lot of meeting.
There's a lot of assembling the players.
Yeah.
But when I thought about it, and there were some other really great contenders this week, but when I really got down to it, I liked that idea that at the beginning we see them, you know, see in the distance this alien crash. And then we don't exactly know what happens until the next day. And I like the restraint of that.
Okay, here's I think the feeling that I had with it.
Okay.
Is that I liked the setup, I liked the structure of it, I liked the characters, I liked the art a lot, and I liked the tone. I think we spent a little too much time being clever with the dialogue and fun. Like when you had to listen to that one, like they're just talking to each other constantly. And I think I would like that, but I got kind of impatient with it.
Okay,
it's just a little.
You're a grump.
Verbose.
No, I can definitely see it. You know, your results may vary, but I was really charmed
by it. What's going on
here?
This is like right up Josh's alley. I'm very scared.
What did you? How about?
Yeah,
I'm
okay.
Going to take the rest
visually,
of the show.
What did you think
about this?
No, I thought it was beautiful. I think from a standpoint of doing faces that are. First of all, they're animals. Second of all, they're incredibly expressive, and they're just British as hell. And I really like that. I mean, like tonally, it was both in the dialogue. I mean, it was a little. I don't know if it was cartoony, but it was very sort of the stereotypical idea of what this little country town would have been, and they're all in their tweed, but just sort of the way, you know, you could immediately tell who the characters were by looking at their faces. You knew that Fox was the drunk, you know, not even from his dialogue, which is what Connor was saying. You knew, you know, you don't mess with a dog because his eyes are sad, and but he's tall and sort of sturdy and not fat, and you know, that kind of thing.
I want to dress like Mr. Slipaway with the white undershirt and the suspenders.
And the suspenders, yeah. I like Mr. Slipaway.
I liked all of the elements of it, but I think I would have given the execution, I guess, a little less of a grade. Obviously, it's all there.
I think our British listeners are probably like rolling their eyes out of their heads, but like I don't know, I'm just a total Anglophile.
They're used to that with me.
I'm a total I just grew up watching a lot of those shows and thinking that like wow, that's, you know, that it's. The tone is so different over there, and I really latched on to that. And I love the dialogue in this, and the art. I want to throw this out. It reminded me a bit of Chris Somni, actually, just in the level of the expression. I think
the line work is very similar.
The line work
that's high praise.
Oh yeah,
it's a really good looking book.
The other thing that made me think that was with Clive with the dog. You never see his eyes actually. You just see those you know upturned U's. You know, he's got the closed eyes, but he's still super expressive when he needs to be. So just the gesture work. And then on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, you've got Fox, who's just like manic all the time.
I love those eyes on him, though. Like how they were dark, you know, like they're like both upper and lower lids were just sort of, it's Dudley Moore. I mean, that's kind of, you get out of it. And you don't see eyes on anybody. The rabbit, whatever, you know, whatever. He's no eyes. You know, the I guess once he sort of opens them when he's excited. But
And that's the thing. I love the way he dressed these characters. The setting is great. I, colors is really nice in this book as well. And so this is part one of a 6-part miniseries. So people should definitely go out and
Boom Studios.
Boom Studios. So,
well, speaking of dogs, in Miss Marvel number 8, Miss Marvel gets a new pet. And that pet's name is Lockjaw.
Lockjaw.
This was great. This was
they made mention of that in Inhuman this week.
Did they?
Yes, they were like, "Wait, where's Lockjaw?" And they said, "Oh, he's off with Ms. Marvel."
Did they say not, exactly like
yeah,
that?
Face, oh. More or less.
He's off with Ms. Marvel number 8.
Charles Soule just didn't even try on that one. He's like, "Whatever, I'm big shit now. What
I got
do you
12
want?
Books.
This was neck and neck, honestly.
This was killing Wolverine?
This was really, really strong. The return of Adrian Alfona. Although the fill-in artist was also great. I can't think of the name at the moment, but he was also good for that Wolverine arc. A little two-parter. But this was just wonderful as a dog lover, as a mecha lover, as a Ms. Marvel lover.
Like everything you want in this.
I was like, man, this is so good. And I think it was one of Adrian Alfona's most fun issues visually, because this was like the most action-packed, I think, that he's done. We started really getting into action in the last two issues, and that was the different artist. But now Kamala goes in, and obviously Lockjaw, who's just huge in this.
Well, I like that. So Lockjaw shows up. She decides she's going to keep him as her pet. And I like that the parents and her brother don't really question the giant one-ton dog.
They're just like, oh, even, you know, the dogs in America are
bulldogs are very soothing. Very comforting.
This isn't just Beethoven. I mean, there's one point where he's like behind her. He like materializes behind her in her room, and his tongue is coming out. It's like the Sarlacc pit, or like it's just crazy. But
I gotta tell you, the whole time that you guys have ever talked about this book, I was like, you know, it's fine. I'm sure it's good or whatever. The fact that Lockjaw's in it,
see what I just did there.
The fact that he's in there, that I like.
Lockjaw. Like
that makes me want to look at it more.
This is
You should check it out. I like the relationship with her friend, who is.
I'm looking at it right now.
Very sort of emasculated. He mentions that because he doesn't get to do. He's got to take the trash out at the convenience store. That's his job. While she runs off being a superhero with a giant transporting dog. It's a good interesting relationship.
Marcio Takara. I like him.
So one of the things is when this book started, I was like, okay, this is really fun. It's really good at the, teenage superhero thing. How good is it going to be just in terms of a superhero story? She's really good at the slice of life, teenager dealing with all of these pressures thing. But there's like a cool superhero story going on. We've got this Thomas Edison clone that's part cockatiel.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just looked at Captain Marvel. Like, you can see why I'd get that mixed up. They came out in the same week.
Don't go for a Miss with M-I-S-S Marvel either. That's a different one.
And so,
is that actually a thing?
No.
Oh, that would be just poor marketing.
So Mr. Marvel.
So this, this bird bad guy is powering mech suits, like, or robots, and even his subterranean lair with mutants that can emit power. So he's using them as power cells, basically. And really creepy idea. And all of a sudden it pops up in this pretty funny, cute story. And then there's this really sort of sinister underbelly to it. I think it's firing on all cylinders. I like it.
Also, the main character is really the closest thing you've got to Stephanie Brown right now in comics.
Oh, yeah.
It's very charming in that same way that Stephanie was back in the old Batgirl run. Mm-hmm. So people who missed that story should definitely be checking it out, because Kamala is a very similar kind of character.
And just, and visually, it looks like nothing else. Like the scene where they materialize, I don't know where they end up, but she does her stretchy thing, and she goes across the chasm, and they pull the camera way out, and it doesn't look like any other Marvel book. It's
pretty great.
Really impressed.
I like that we get to say that about a lot of Marvel books.
Yeah. It is absolutely 100% unlike anything else Marvel's published.
I know that there are like a lot of diverse looking books, but like this one is like
it does
the pinnacle.
It does. I haven't seen Adrian Alfona. Like, it doesn't look like a Marvel book in general.
It doesn't
at all.
It's more like a children's book almost.
And it doesn't even. Yeah, it looks like a children's.
But it doesn't look like children's book. Adrian Alfona, as I remember.
It doesn't look like Runaways.
It's still great though.
It's yeah.
Guys, I read Stumptown number one, then the third volume of the Stumptown Greg Rucka PI series from Oni Press, and Greg Rucka likes soccer, I think. That's my takeaway from this.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that from following him on Twitter, but...
Yeah, he does like soccer, doesn't he?
I like soccer, too. I'm not making fun of him.
There's nothing wrong with that. However,
yeah,
if you take out the soccer from this book, are you left with much?
No.
Yes.
No.
I disagree.
Okay.
This is the cold open.
Mm-hmm. I get that, but it's
the
like...
cold open of the mystery. It's the first act of Murder, She Wrote, and we're setting up the scene. And I think he set up a bunch of the unusual suspects. And there's a few little clues in there, I think, as to what's happened. I don't know how much further it's going to escalate, or if we're just going to be focused on this one attack of Mercury. But beyond just the mystery stuff, I really like the character work. I liked the relationship between Dex and Ansel.
We've time jumped with that, right? He's much older now. Relatively.
I don't know about much older, but...
That much older.
I mean, it's all right. You know, it's a different artist, so it's, you know, a little bit different.
Yeah, but, I wasn't sure.
But no, I mean, I can see, like, wow, this is a lot of soccer, and where is this going? But by the end of it, it was like, okay, I see what he's doing here.
I mean, I trust his long-form plotting, and I'm sure a lot of this will come into play later. But this is a problem with your 20-page story is that you often get chapters where there's not a lot going on.
Well, there is a lot of inside, you know, Portland kind of stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was. Do they really have that many organized chants at a soccer game in Portland?
Yeah, they're especially Portland. They're
okay.
All, you
know, I'm not disagreeing. I was like, that's really.
If you think about it, where would they especially have, where would they really get into the Britishness of it? Portland.
Yeah.
I like the characters, but I read it. I was like, I was much more excited for this than I was after I finished reading it.
Yeah, I guess at the end, like the reveal of is it Mercury? You said his name was
Mercury.
Like, did we know him before, or is he new?
It's been a while, so
I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, so what I'm saying is, the thing is, something happened to him at the end, and you, I don't know, like it didn't feel like a payoff of anything that was earned.
Yeah, so basically,
I didn't really know who he was, or I wasn't made to care who he was.
Main character Dax
nice.
And her brother go to a soccer game in Portland, and their friend, who's also there with them, is either dead or beaten up really badly at the end of it, and so then we don't know what happened. That's sort of the mystery.
But we got the different like scarves and everything, and then bumping into different people at different points, and so I'm kind of curious, like, you know, moving forward, looking back, like, well, what was significant about that moment? So it doesn't seem significant now, but it could later. So I just kind of look at it as a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
Might be.
Could be. It wasn't bad. It was just a lot of soccer chance.
It was. You know what it was? It was different.
Yes.
Than what we had previously gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I don't know, maybe my expectations were not met, I guess. And, you know, I have fairly high expectations for this. It's you know, probably, you know, if not my favorite sort of working comics writer, he's up there. And, mm-hmm. and I love this series. And, you know, I want to be blown away all the time. So
I was reading comics last night, finishing my stack. And I finished Velvet number 7, and I was like, well, fuck, because I was thinking ahead to the year end where we pick our top 5 books, and I'm like, how can Velvet not be in that top 5? And how could that top 5 not be almost all Image books at this point?
It's quite good.
It's really good. And I think what happens with Velvet is it gets overshadowed because it doesn't come out monthly.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out whenever they're done, which I'm totally fine with, but... You do seem to forget that it's there because it doesn't come out all the time like a lot of other books do. But the story right now, The Secret Lives of Deadmen, this is part 2 of this arc in which Velvet, our main character, is trying to track down who the mole is and who got her husband killed and all kinds of things going on. It's just so good.
Yeah, it really is. I was watching Skyfall the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And it has... I don't know. It feels like watching an old sort of British spy movie, like
Velvet?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, I just was like, because Skyfall sort of like they have a modern updating of that, whereas Velvet, it just isn't. It's just,
it feels very period PC.
Yeah. And it's sort of, it's sort of timeless. I was reading it and I thought, you know, I wouldn't necessarily know that this was Ed Brubaker. In fact, it's really showing me a bit of range on him that I don't know that he necessarily had. And I'm saying that's a person who really likes Ed Brubaker's work, but it really feels like a different kind of stretch. And I like the world. I like getting into the thoughts of now we're with another guy. You know,
yes, we're like, following the guy that's chasing her, and we really get to see how good she is through his eyes as he's trying to find her, and
so
how much she was underestimated as just the money penny. You know, she was the assistant to the to the director, and no one realized that she was a super spy in her younger days, and now she's out in the field again, and everyone's like, oh, well, fuck, she's really good, and we can't catch her.
Yeah, I really liked the reversal. I didn't feel let down by the fact that we weren't following the main character anymore. And I want to go back to her, but it was cool just to be like, here's what's happening over here. And you see such an insight into their thought process and the things that are going on in a way that wasn't boring explication, I guess, exposition.
And really great art here. I mean, Steve Epting, the way they have a really great chemistry. And
yeah, you could say.
You know, he's one thing Brubaker's got is a stable of really fantastic artists to do his draw his stories, and
you're gonna say bidding,
do his bidding. but you can really tell that Epting's getting off on not doing a superhero story because this is some of his best work, and there's just great. There's great panels. I love the shot of the SAS guys coming out of the helicopter, which is from below as they come down towards you, and it's. He's a great guy for this because he does really ground level stuff really well, but also in a really exciting way. And, you know, the hairstyles, the clothing, it all feels very authentic to the 70s. Is that where we are?
Yeah. I feel like late 60s, 70s.
That was like my favorite parts of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was like just the periodness of it. And like there was that like company party they had.
That's a rough movie.
I own it. I like parts of it.
I really wanted to like that movie.
I agree with what Connor just said.
It needs an espresso shot or something.
In my current incarnation,
oh yeah,
I don't quite have that in me. That's what I'll go with it, if that makes sense.
That's like when you said you wanted to watch the Robert Redford movie, Robert Redford versus the Ocean.
It's like, I loved it.
Oh, did you? Okay, good.
I loved it. I was like,
it's great. I was like, I don't know.
It was great. I was strangely riveted the whole time. Good. And it's incredibly riveting, but for none of the reasons that we're used to being riveted.
Right.
Right.
And I was, anyway,
what now?
Yeah. I like the catharsis of him just not saying a fucking word or getting frustrated. Like within 5 minutes, I've been like, motherfucking shit. And he finally, kind of like an hour and a half in, he kind of just goes.
he was really good. Where can people buy that movie, Josh? If they were so inclined to just buy it straight out,
Best Buy. Wait, no. Oh, I see what you were going for there. No. You can go to ifinma.com/Amazon, and you can get into our little portion of the Amazon store. And if you do that, what'll happen is there will be a wee little cookie implanted that will say to Amazon, "Hey, these guys send us, so you have to send them a little bit of the money that I'm spending there." And that is a way for you to sort of do what you were going to do anyway and indirectly contribute to operating expenses here at ifanboy.com. We're all going to get remote control helicopters, and then we're going to start to upgrade them, and it's not going to be cheap, and we need your help with that.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at.
Mine flies on caviar.
That was not where I was going to go with that. And then you can also be a little more direct, and you can take the if you really like this thing and you want it to continue and you want to show your appreciation, you can go to ifanboy.com/registration. You can directly contribute either $3 a month or $30 for a whole year, which is sort of a bargain if you do the math on that. Or you can just pick a denomination of your choosing and donate because this is an important show to you. It's a part of your it's part of your thing. It's a part of your comic book life, and that's part of what you do and who you are, and we really appreciate people who do that, and it's really neat that people do that, and we are always amazed by it, and I need to make my helicopter go higher.
Well, it's not who they are. It's what they're about.
Right, but it's not what they do.
Right.
I like the idea of there being like an actuary out there with a calculator, and like 1471 seems about right for FM.
Listening to the show is like, it's not like a platform. It's
no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
What's the name of that movie, Josh, that people you were just talking about? People might want to check it out.
I literally was like Redford on a boat.
Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
Which guest? Oh, man. Can we talk about that? Love to.
Death of Wolverine number 2. So after you guys praised it.
All is Lost? Is that what it's called?
All is Lost.
All is okay. Lost.
Death of Wolverine number 2. I read 1 and 2 back to back this week after you guys praised it. And you were right. It's lots of fun.
It was.
It's good times. And
it's good.
And I like the shift between 1 and 2. It's, you know, two completely different settings. We're in Madripoor now. And you can sort of see what the tenor of this is going to be. We're meeting all of the important people in Wolverine's life. So the cliffhanger at the end of the first one, not that Nuke is an important person in Wolverine's life, but at the end of that, we've got the tease of Viper and, more importantly, Sabretooth. So those two play a prominent role over Madripoor in this one. And then Kitty Pryde shows up and Yuriko. So it's all the greatest hits.
None of that matters.
Yeah.
None of that matters.
There's only one thing in this that mattered. I know that, Connor, I can tell by the sound of your voice, you know exactly what it is. And that's pages 4 and 5, where we go to the back of the bar where Wolverine is hairy with an untied bow tie in the Josh Lyman preferred style, with two buxom ladies with glasses on. And right there, it's won me over. I was like, oh, that's the best drawing that Steve McNiven's ever done. Is what that is. And if you go to the back, and this is the best, like, because these all have all the special edition director blah 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 in them, you can see the script page for that. And Charles Soule had indicated that he should have shaved his head.
Yeah, he had multiple looks. He had shaved head, goatee. Yeah. He had different things.
The one that they picked was the right one.
Yeah, it was,
because that was one arresting image. I was like, well, that was great.
Shaved head is very Max Payne.
So did Steve McNiven draw this? Start drawing this 4 years ago?
I don't know, but that's, yeah.
He did two issues in a row. 2 months.
He can't have, because I know that the script wasn't started that long ago.
You're 2 weeks in a row.
You're jinxing it. Moving it's forward.
That's amazing.
But is this a weekly book?
It is a weekly book.
There's only 4 issues, so theoretically he could have drawn the 4 issues over, you know, 8 months or something like that. And yeah, that's about right.
And no disrespect to Steve McNiven. He's great. But, he's not had the most timely reputation in the past. That's all I'm saying.
Well, 4 issues is realistic. And if they're going to bomb him out like this, that's, I don't know. It's good. It's good Steve McNiven.
Yeah.
It's very good Steve McNiven.
And speaking of Skyfall, you get the main character at, the bottom of the barrel. And he has to go home alone in Skyfall. Here he has to use an Iron Man helmet as a weapon, which I thought was a great idea. Like, such a good use of the mythos and all of the elements you have in the wide Marvel universe.
So does the helmet have its own power source?
Apparently. Don't worry about it.
I was confused about how that worked.
Don't worry about it.
Speaking of books that come out when they're ready, MPH number 3, I couldn't even remember when number 2 came out. I actually kind of forgot about number 2, but... this continues, I think, good Miller.
But a little bit, we're hanging out with jerks, and you're like, oh, there's going to be a schism, and they're going to fight and whatever, because the two people don't know how to control themselves. And then you got to the end, and I was like, well, all right, I didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't see it coming either. So this, if you recall, this is the story of a bunch of criminals, or one criminal and his friends from Detroit who found some MPH pills, which make you go really, really, really fast. And they've been taking revenge on those who... they blame on the downfall of Detroit, bankers and such, and the government. But in this issue, his friend, who goes to the White House to find evidence of their malfeasance, suddenly loses his speed power because he mixed it with cocaine, he thinks, and then takes a lot of pills to get out of the situation and ends up time traveling back in time. And that was awesome.
It really was.
This book's really good.
Yeah, it was inventive. And I just was the end was unexpected, and to see sort of Figueroa switch gears and draw, I was like, wait, that police officer doesn't look normal.
He has an awesome mustache.
Awesome. Yeah, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
He's an old timey mustache.
Fair enough. Hey, you know how every once in a while they do one of those Deadpool issues where it's not now. It takes place in a different era, and then in the style of said era, Oh, what's his name? I'm opening it, but I can't get
Steve
to it.
McNiven.
Scott Koblish.
Scott Koblish, yeah.
Who can do anything?
Yep.
Well, this was the Liefeld era one.
wasn't this the one where they actually use the Liefeld page?
Oh, did they? I could see why. I mean,
was Cable in this issue?
No. Alpha Flight.
Book. That must have been a different book.
Yeah, Alpha Flight. Although it like it's a pretty spot on Liefeld, but with like pretty good anatomy and storytelling. Just big.
Have we learned our lesson?
Nah, no, it's fine. The collar on Iron Fist is magnificent. It's like 3 feet taller than him. So it's pretty great. But it was fun.
You sold over your shoulder.
These are fun issues. I kind of forget to read Deadpool every once in a while. And then when I come back, I don't get lost. I know where I am. Like, there's a big through line that's been going on for this whole thing. It's just fun. The throwbacks are great.
Throwbacks are my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw what it was and I was like, well, all right. And I don't really like this era, so it didn't hold as much appeal to me. But he even did layouts from the time. Cool. And so it was very cool.
It's very inside baseball. But yeah. But it's good.
Totally.
Remember earlier when I yelled about the whole fuck thing about Velvet? Mm-hmm. That was because I had just read Lazarus. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, of course, Lazarus is also going to be in the top five. Because Lazarus number 11 came out, and this is the first issue of the Conclave, in which the families are going to meet up for the first time since the war, mm-hmm. since they divided the world up. And this continues to be awesome.
The thing that was really great about this was that it was the first time where you see her in a different environment, talking to someone she kind of trusts, mm-hmm. and you can see that she's starting to work things out and break out of her programming, and you just had this feeling like, oh, you're screwed. this isn't going to end well. You shouldn't trust any of these people, you know. And she's innocent but super powerful, and I loved this issue.
I liked again. The other Lazarus, who was kind of like a knight. Mm-hmm. Felt very Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah.
She stalked up to the thing and drew her sword and was like, I'm the other, you know.
Yeah.
Here's my message. It was very, very cool. The world building continues to be awesome. The letters column continues to be great, including the letter with the greatest backhanded compliment of all. He's very loved issue 10 because the first nine issues were so boring.
That's comic books right there. But isn't that the fandom that we've come to know and love?
Right. So Lazarus continues wonderful world building. We're issue 11.
11. That's it. I can't imagine.
It feels so dense for only one issue. Apparently, there's a big hardback coming out in November, which will include all of the back matter and all of the world building, including a map of the world that shows you where the territories are, which I'm looking forward to very much. And this week in under Avengers Undercover 10, this was the final issue of the saga, beginning with Avengers Arena into Avengers Undercover, and we wrapped up the story of the young teen heroes who had infiltrated the Brotherhood of Evil.
Yes.
Sort of more or less.
With Baron Zemo, and this is where it all wrapped up. And I liked that they all got to, well, not all, the ones who were really good the whole time got to have a little moment of leisure in the lake with the water. And
Cammy got her big hero moment. The only thing I had, the only problem, I love this. I love the series just like I did the one that came before it. It was totally cool, and you have Arcade got the same comeuppance as Lots of Huggin' Bear in Toy Story 3, which was nice. in case you didn't put that together out there. There was one bit where Zemo just went on a Star Wars reference rampage, and I thought, I don't think Zemo says that. Is this a third Zemo?
Well, look, just because you're from the World War II era doesn't mean you can't love Star Wars.
No, he's – well, remember there was Baron Zemo, and then there was the younger Zemo who was the one who did Thunderbolts. And I assume this is that one.
Do evil people not love Star Wars?
I don't feel like you're going to talk like Kevin Smith.
First appearance of Zemo Jr., I have on vinyl.
What?
There's a record where they did a dramatization of it. It was that on one side, and on the other side it was like Spider-Man versus Wolfman.
It's a record. I'm stunned.
Yeah, you shocked him into. I didn't mention Copperhead, and I wanted to, so I'm not going to add more. But read Copperhead 1, and then maybe we'll talk about number 2 next time. But it was a space western kind of thing.
All right, so those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com, and you can find the post for this show. You can talk about these books, other books that came out. How wonderful Wild's End was. It really was wonderful, despite Josh's hating it.
It's not what I said, mate.
Saying it's the worst thing you read this week.
Don't mince my fucking words.
Or, can also talk about What was the movie called again?
All is Lost.
All is Lost. I saw it in the theaters. I should remember the name of it.
Because the title's weird.
Well, that's what the All is Lost is. Isn't the nautical one?
Did you see that with Robert Redford? Was that it? Or
no, I saw Robert Redford speak. And then a month later, I went and saw All is Lost in the theater, and I was one of three people in the theater.
Yeah, that seems about right. The thing about Robert Redford is he went from being like vital and handsome to just looking old in like one beat. Like,
well,
he just crested a hill, and he spends a lot of time
in Utah in the sun, and his skin is now partially leather.
Yeah.
Like, he also looked good for a really long time, though. Like, longer than you're supposed to.
Listen, if you want me to talk about how handsome Robert Redford was for most of his movie career, I can do that. But he has old man body now.
He's almost 80.
I know. There's nothing wrong with that.
He was fighting a whole ocean.
Why was he out there?
He was
sailing. Who would do that? I don't want to do that. No part of me wants to do that.
There's no good ever comes to getting on a boat and going into the water.
You're not wrong about that.
What? You've got no recourse out there.
Lugail, tummy cock.
So let's answer a couple of emails they've been building up. The first from Blake. Blake says, after listening to episode 450 and hearing how writing the Pick of the Week post made you learn more about the craft of comics, I've got an art appreciation question for you. How did you learn to appreciate the work of the penciler, inker, and colorist individually? I've read comics for a long time, but still struggle to appreciate each artist's input on its own merit. I know when something isn't working, I just have trouble recognizing exceptional work. How did you learn to appreciate these things?
It's a good question, and I think it's difficult to answer. I don't think you can always do it. I think it helps to be familiar with people so that you can see, like, if you're familiar with a penciler and all of a sudden something looks really different, then you can look and see if they're inking themselves or somebody else is inking them.
Look at those issues where there's like 15 inkers on the Jim Lee book, right?
Yeah.
Or Doug Monkey has it happen to him a lot.
What happens then is that it's not necessarily bad. It's just that it's so different from page to page that it feels bad.
And you can
inconsistency is bad.
Yeah, what you can do is really see how a different inker changes the work. Some inkers,
by either doing too much or not enough, or
some inkers really impose their own style on the art, and you can see how that affects the pencil. What it comes down to, I think, is exposure to lots of material, because if you see an artist work enough, and suddenly it doesn't look like it normally does, you can look and say, "Oh, the inker's different." And then you see, "Oh, well, that's how the inker changed it."
That works both ways, though. So, because if Bill Sienkiewicz inks something,
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying,
but I know.
See how it changes things.
A good example of that is like this is a specific example. But a long time ago, Sienkiewicz did a bunch of issues of Green Arrow that Mike Norton had drawn, and is the best thing that Mike Norton has ever drawn because it came in and added Sienkiewicz. And like Sienkiewicz is actually a really good example of like a guy who, when I was young and I first saw it, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, oh, when I was a kid, that wasn't the style I wanted.
I hate it. And now I can't get enough of it. I think it's so gorgeous. And it unfortunately is a very intangible thing. Like, it's like once you hear it, once it pops, you know, that sound. Well, it's the same thing for the look. Like, once you see it, like you can't unsee it. For most part, though, with me, over time, I have gotten much more. The thing that I've liked much more is simplicity. Like, the more that they can not do, the more that they can accomplish with as little as possible. And I think the best place that we can see this is not only in sort of cartoony kind of stuff that's been going, but really in colorists.
Look at that segue.
Yeah.
That was a masterful job.
Thank you. Colorists have, over the last, 10 years since digital coloring really became the main thing, they've learned to scale way the hell back.
We had a really dark period where everything was really over-rendered in those Photoshop effects. You had
We can do. It's right. Like, great. Don't do that.
Yeah. Scale it all back. In this question, coloring is obviously the easiest one to pick out because coloring is so vital to, it's there in the page, whereas inking, you really have to know what you're looking for.
And inking also just did quite literally bleeds into the penciling, so like sometimes you can't tell the difference between the two.
The thing about
you don't have the trained eye.
The thing is this: here's their responsibilities. The penciler's responsibility, first and foremost, before anything, is going to be the storytelling. It's going to be telling what's going on clearly. After that, is anatomy, is rendering is just, you know, acting is description, you know, all that stuff. But storytelling comes first. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it's the anchor's job to support that, basically.
But
it's
also every team is different. A pencil might pencil more loosely, more like breakdowns. The anchor will come in and put shape to it. Other pencils will be really tight, and then the anchor has, you know, less input. And it really depends on a lot of things. Ultimately, though, Kevin Smith was right. The anchor is just a tracer.
No, whoa. Don't. Well, no, I was going to say he's kidding. I was going to say a really good example of that. It's really sometimes interesting to look at how some artists who ink themselves work. Mm-hmm. A guy like Gabe Hardman, who I think whose work we all really like, and he's an artist. Like, you know, like he's like first and foremost, not necessarily just comic book artist, he's an artist. Exactly, he does figure drawing. Enjoys it. Like at cons lately, he's been like, I want to draw portraits of people instead of Batman over and over.
Those are my favorite tweets, by the way. When he's like, I'm drawing someone named Trachea today or something.
But he does, like, when he draws, his pencils are super loose, you know, and he'll go in later with, and the inks will be what does it. You know, other people will draw incredibly tight pencils. A guy like Ryan Stegman, he does super tight pencils, you know, and like, there was even a movement for a little while where they didn't even use inkers anymore. They just came in with colors, you know, and some guys you can do that with, some guys you can't. I find that really interesting. A guy like Somni, who we mentioned earlier, like when he inks his stuff, he does it reverse. Like he adds the he draws
the negative space.
He draws in light first, which is usually people are outlining the light and doing everything, which I find fascinating. The thing that, you know, at the end of the day, it's not objective. It's completely subjective, and it's one of those stupid, like, I don't know what art is, but I know when I see it.
The question comes back to how did we do it, and it really was just years and years of exposure to what
and having to at. Talk about it.
And when you find out that artists are reading what you're writing, and you know, you don't want to, you know, you want to give them their due.
But it really isn't so much even all that as it is is having to analyze. You know, it's not just when you're just reading it to enjoy the story and follow the characters, it's one thing. But when you're reading it, you have to talk about it and
you
write
have to
about
say
it
why you like something
and do well, all
that's
that.
It. Like at the end of it, it's very easy for most people to go, "I like that,"
mm-hmm. but why?
But then we have to take it one thing and go, "Why did I like or why did I not like it?"
Or the reverse, why didn't this work? And then you look, oh, this is an issue of Justice League with five inkers, and I see why the art was so inconsistent because it was different styles. And that's where you start to look at, well, what is the effect the inker has, and why does that work and not work?
And it starts as a reverse engineering thing, and then it becomes something that you start noticing.
Yeah,
you know, going in, man, because you know that you're going to be writing about.
I wasn't here for it, but there was one specific page in that last All-Star Western.
Mm-hmm.
It was the one where because this was Dave Stewart of all people with Darwin Cook, which is that's as good as things get. That's New Frontier. That's among the best things that have ever been done in the modern age. And there's the page where somebody comes in to tell the deputies that something's going on, and then there's a flash
mm-hmm.
of light from the dynamite going off. Yep. And I was just like, that's comic book storytelling at its finest. And, you know, 5-8 years ago, no, probably more than five, maybe five. Maybe I wouldn't have noticed that the same way. But like things like that stand out to me like a beacon in the night. Like,
and it's
just like, look what they've done.
The cliche of like score, simple. Right? Like you shouldn't really notice it. Mm-hmm. You know, but
also I think it's important to note that this you don't have to enjoy your comics or read your comics this way. There's nothing wrong with nothing wrong at all with reading.
Probably
them
shouldn't.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't unless you have to fill some time on it.
But if you want to, and if you want to write critically about stuff, I think it is important to try and be articulate about, you know, the art and not just save it for a paragraph at the end. You know, of your review.
That's
paragraph three. Always has been, always will.
I'm not saying that about you guys. I'm saying I think everybody's guilty of that some of the time.
I got to say, though, like learning more about comics, how they're made, what's really good about them has made me overall enjoy them a lot more. Mm-hmm. Although it made me, you know, I'm picky. I've always been picky, you know. But, you know, it's really neat. I really like that.
One more trick.
Mm-hmm.
When you finish the comic, take your time with it. Don't, you know, flip through it in like 3 minutes. Read slowly, carefully. Eat the comic book.
Like its power.
Eat it.
Absorb its essence.
And kind of hold it for a while. Don't go right away when you have to.
Let it
hang out in there and ferment.
My trick is I stopped reading them in 2009.
I can't. It's I read them digitally. I don't even see how that's possible.
Yeah, Josh is going to go broke going through iPads with that trick you just said.
It would literally take about 2 weeks.
Luckily, you got one of those new iPads. Because if I had to eat my first gen iPad, would take a photocopy generator attached to it
of the iPad
and the exhaust pipe.
Yeah,
the exhaust pipe not clean.
Well, for one thing, those tracks that it gets around on, they're heavy. Those are solid steel.
And it's got the pump, like, you know, the old-timey rail cars that you had to pump up and down to move to get, you know, to make... it's
Robert Fulton built that thing to last.
I don't even know how you get past the razor wire.
I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like a good time, a good meal, Paul. That's all I'm saying. Let's do another quick one while we still have some time. Jeff writes and says, is there a particular issue or comic book run / series that is widely dismissed / disregarded / outright disliked, but which you have a personal affection for? I got an easy one right off the bat.
Okay.
That we all at the site, me and Josh and Ron, liked and got so much crap for that was super fun was the Red Hulk, Jeff Loeb's Red Hulk run, which we all enjoyed. It was a book of the month. And that never became not entertaining. Whenever we would praise it, people would lose their minds.
It was good.
It was super fun.
It was. I agree. I don't care what happened to the mustache.
I do care, and that's what made it fun.
Yeah, I was totally fine with that. I agree. That's a good answer. That's a very good answer. I didn't know if I had one. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Everything I like is wonderful.
Paul?
I liked, I know Brian Wood's Conan. I know there was enough people who really liked it, but I remember that got a lot of flack because they weren't drawing Conan so, you know, mostly that was Becky Cloonan most of the time.
Brian Wood's Northlanders in the beginning got
Northlanders is an excellent one. I found myself missing that the other day.
In the beginning you got a lot of flack because he wrote it in a modern way.
Oh yeah, okay.
And also just like I mean, if it's widely dismissed and disregarded, like there's plenty of books that people don't really talk about that weren't I mean honestly, Scalped, if you look at the numbers that it was doing compared to what, you know, kind of things he does now, or Hellblazer or stuff like that, like those were dismissed. You know, like Hellblazer was selling under 6,000 copies a month.
I think disregard throws this whole question off because dismissed and outright disliked is one thing. Disregarded is a lot of the books we talk about.
Yes, yes.
You know, Wild's End isn't going to sell, you know, burn up the charts. Neither is Stumptown or Miss Marvel.
Well, and at the same time, there's a bunch like that. So things that are disliked that we liked, I don't know. I don't know that there's a lot of that. Well... Oh, I had it and it's gone now. All right, move on. Sorry.
Well, we have a few more minutes. We could talk about the book we skipped in the script. How about that?
Copperhead?
Astro City 15. Oh. was in the script and we got skipped. So we have some few minutes. I really like this two-part little story.
I was super impressed by the fact that who he made his protagonist in this nice lady, and like you thought there was one thing about her, and then they went back and they showed her. You know, her Reed Richards, Victor Von Doom sort of history.
And she was like lobotomized by Doom.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. And then, you know, it was all in there. I really like the way that she treated her nephew. Mm-hmm. You're just dumb. Your fault. It's fine.
Yeah, it was a really nice arc. The old lady with the robot museum whose nephew took advantage of her and used her robots for crime. And then she got framed for it. And
she was the greatest robot scientist of all time.
Right. And could actually talk to the robots. I thought it was fun. I think this book continues to be a really great resurgence for the book that, for a while, with all those minis, wasn't all that compelling.
I think it's really fascinating that it has come back on Vertigo, which is weird the more that I think about it. And it's absolutely the same, but not in a bad way.
Right.
It's one, it completely flies in the face if you can't go home again.
Totally.
If you were to tell me that, when did the first one come out? 92, 3, 1, something like that?
Way back then, yeah.
I mean, so we're talking 20 plus years ago. And like he's come back. He's like, well, I want to keep it. Like he came back and it's got all the verve that it ever had.
And the charm.
Yes. And it really is timeless.
Ooh, Paul, that's a good one for you, Paul. You don't like this book.
What's that?
You're not overly happy with this book. That would be a good answer for the last email.
No, because what?
The last time we talked about it, you weren't overly happy with it.
But the question was, what's stuff that people don't like and you do like?
Oh, right. Well, that's the opposite.
Right.
Well, it works. We like a thing that Paul doesn't like.
But I feel like I'm in the minority on that, so.
Right. That's opposite.
Like, even if you just look at, you know, us three, there's two of you and one of me.
Okay, so Astro City.
It's not wrong.
15. The math works. There are two of us and one of Paul. Astro City 15 was really, really good again.
What we did there was fail to come up with an enticing hypothesis and connect it to the earlier conversation.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well. What do you do?
We used to be good at this.
Sometimes it doesn't work. And you just push it aside and there's another show next week. You got to stay in the game.
What movies has Paul been watching from the 80s lately? Anything? We have to come up with his next assignment.
I thought it was Beverly Hills Cop. We did that.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
Obviously.
You could do it's Coming to America in the 80s or the 90s.
I've seen that.
88, 89. That's
the border.
You could go for that. That's fine.
I've seen it.
So, how do you feel about it?
It's good.
Let's get into it. It's like he's not trying.
Send back.
I got to say, I'm having some concerns about this new job of yours.
I feel like it's taking away from your energy and verve.
You know, what's actually really particularly disturbing me is the segment Paul does movies from the 80s.
That's on comics?
I just feel like that's a little... That's a little bit taken from what we do here.
Email at contact@ifanboy.com. Call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. We haven't had a show completely fall off the track.
Honestly, I'm just thinking about editing this episode because I think
the format of this show is just completely blown to smithereens or just gone. I don't know what happened. I blame myself.
The thing is, for you, that's very discomforting.
No, I don't really care. I just feel
okay. I know. You've grown.
But it's also, I feel like I'm preemptively pointing it out so people won't say what happened in the show. If I point out the show blew up.
Here's the thing. I typically find that when it does fall apart at the end, people seem to enjoy it. But I think that we cover ourselves by saying, listen, we know that it fell apart.
Also, important to note, not on purpose. We don't plan these things.
Yeah, we do.
Paul.
Empire Strikes Back is a good 80s movie.
What people don't know is word for word, all this is written out beforehand. Paul, do you want to tell people about the show that's coming up?
Yeah, we did a special edition show on the Gotham pilot. We will not be talking about every episode of Gotham, but we thought it would be fun to talk about this one. And maybe we'll check back in on it later, but that was Connor and yours mostly truly.
It'll be coming out in 2 weeks. We'll put it out the day that Gotham premieres on the 22nd, I believe. I believe that's what the date is.
Sounds right. Donal Logue.
How is Lieutenant Eckhart in that?
He thinks about the future.
Not the future, Jack. that's the sound he makes when they shoot him.
So look for that one.
I just watched Good Morning Vietnam because I'd never seen it before.
What?
And
whoa!
I'd seen that. That's a good one.
I don't like Robin Williams. Wow. I never have. So and go big surprise. The movie's a lot of Robin Williams. Anyway, the point is that Robert Wall is in it,
yes,
and he has a ridiculous laugh.
He does.
Which is the sound that Lieutenant Eckhart makes when he's shot.
Jesus. All right, so the show about Gotham's coming up in 2 weeks, then that'll be
Forrest Whitaker is excellent in it, because I'm only thinking about him from The Shield these days, when he offers people gum and it's supposed to freak them out, which I still do to my wife.
In Last King of Scotland. It was good.
Yeah, well, Idi Amin.
Look for that in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com. We can comment on this show, the books of the week that we talked about, other things, movies, the format of this show, next week's Gotham show. You'll find that there. Everything's happening at ifanboy.com.
You can follow ifanboy if you want. Twitter.com/ifanboy. Facebook.com/ifanboy.
Okay, this is bullshit. What's coming up here?
You can follow us all individually at C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and Jeff Cannata.
I am man.
If you hadn't said anything, I would have put your name in.
J.A. Flynn.
If you had to say something.
Dig us, write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcast. Yeah. Spread the iFanboy love.
I feel comfortable.
Do it.
It's a weird Michael J. Fox.
I was finally able to tap into my Matthew McConaughey when I was able to say the name of the director who won the Emmy, Cary Fukugawa. And I was like, oh, I got it. I've got it now. If I have to center myself, I just say, Cary Fukugawa. All right.
Did you
I think it sounds Fukunaga, like Fukunaga, I believe.
You missed handsome Cary Fukugawa. That's what you should have said.
He was, I said that to my wife. I go, he's really handsome, isn't he? She's like, yeah. Yep. Looked him up. Oh, he's made of a mixture of all these beautiful people. Look at him.
Yeah. He's like a Petri dish person.
He's a very handsome man.
Pizzolatto also kind of handsome.
Is he?
Yeah. He does after the credits things.
It's a different handsome than Daniel Craig, though. It's not the same.
Well,
Daniel Craig's more of a rugged, you know, he's going to
like
throw you over his shoulder and take you to bed kind of handsome. You know, just that's off the top of my head.
I'm just picturing it.
Give me a minute with that. doing it with Connor.
Because
like,
you're
okay. All right, no, I got this. He's like, carry me.
Because I feel
you
like
have a long torso. So
I know. I feel like I would.
It's true.
Fold over and hit the ground, maybe in that scenario. But
actor Daniel Craig injured as the movie starts.
All right. Until next week, I'm Connor.
write a review on iTunes of that. Come on.
You're wearing a Daniel Craig t-shirt while he's carrying you over his shoulder. I don't know why. I'm Paul.
Eat popcorn.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm panels.net's Paul McCumberin.
Thank you.
Present.
I'm Cary Fukunaga.
Are you? Because if you are, I got
you
some
wish.
Ideas.
Get over here.
He's not going to carry you to the bed, though.
No.
He's going to look at you from the doorway.
He's going to watch you go and do a tracking shot all the way through the house.
And you're going to jump in bed all on your own.
I'll tell you what you don't need. What he doesn't need. He doesn't need Daniel Craig's jeans. He can wear whatever he wants.
Jeans with a G.
He was dressed like a moron, and it didn't matter.
And the hair. Not good hair, but didn't matter.
Didn't matter.
We're going
to do a show
us?
About handsome men now.
So I'm sorry, Paul.
What?
Why?
Because he's got to edit this nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.